They entertained millions and influenced thousands. Today, the honors come in for 14 acts of the rock era nominated for induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. As we do each year on nomination day, we've assembled area musicologists to talk rock, and as always, many styles of music are noted among the groups and artists named, from repeat nominees Iron Maiden and Rage Against the Machine to first-time nominee Cyndi Lauper, George Michael, Willie Nelson, and Missy Elliott. And we want to hear what you have to say about the 2023 grouping. I'm Rick Jackson. Welcome to The Sound of Ideas. 8 of these acts are first-time nominees. We'll talk the importance of their inclusion, and we also know you'll want to rag about who was snubbed, sometimes a livelier discussion than who actually made the cut. Following that, we open the pages of a new book by another man who made his living on stage, former Resonators guitarist Mark Lee Shannon. He made the transition from hard-living bandmate and friend of Michael Stanley to a columnist and sometimes substance abuse counselor, mostly all from his base in Akron. The story behind Sober Chronicles after national and local news. It is The Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Rick Jackson. Thank you for joining us, and happy Nomination Wednesday. And a message coming from my eyes says, leave it alone. Feeling pumped up yet? Yes, the music means it's time to dig into the nominees for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Class of 2023. This is always a fun show. This is just the collection of nominees, not the inductees. Those will be narrowed down from this list in a few months. If you haven't heard, because the announcement was less than an hour ago, the full list this year includes Kate Bush, Sheryl Crow, Missy Elliott, Iron Maiden, Joy Division, New Order, Cyndi Lauper, George Michael, Willie Nelson, Rage Against the Machine, Soundgarden, The Spinners, A Tribe Called Quest, Warren Zevon, and first-year eligible first-time nominees, the White Stripes, who you're hearing right now. Well, today on the program, we'll discuss this year's kind of short list of nominees for a change. Then stick around. Later in the hour, a conversation with Mark Lee Shannon. He was one of Michael Stanley's Resonators, a longtime area musician, now with a new book out. It's called Sober Chronicles. It looks at his journey to become a chemical dependency counselor. Let me now introduce our music enthusiast who will be helping sort through this year's nominations. First up, Kabir Bhatia, senior arts producer here at IdeaStream Public Media and certifiable record fanatic. Good morning, Kabir.
Good morning, Rick.
You don't like the title? What's wrong?
I love it. I'm having it emblazoned on my chest right now.
Certifiable record fanatic. Get it right. Okay. Also with us, Annie Zaleski. She's a Cleveland-based author and journalist. Her work has appeared in Rolling Stone, The Guardian, Billboard, as well as NPR. Annie, welcome to The Sound of Ideas.
Thanks for having me.
Now, both these experts will be weighing in plenty on this year's nominees, but also, very importantly, we want to hear from you. What do listeners have to say about these specific artists? Who do you want inducted into the Rock Hall in 2023? And who do you think was snubbed for a nomination? I know those will light up the lines. Give us a call. The number's 866-578-0903 or 216-578-0903. You may email questions, thoughts, comments, and insults to soi@wcpn.org. Don't insult us. Insult the Rock Hall. And you can tweet us. We're at Sound of Ideas. Kabir, just 14 nominees this year, the fewest in more than a dozen years. Surprised?
A little surprised, but at the same time, I can understand them wanting to sort of bring things more, not centralized is the word, but if you look at the early classes, they had 10, 15 people being inducted in those early classes. Forget the nominees, which is a bigger pool. So I have to think that now, the last several years, it's been 6 or 7 people who get in. Doubling that number for the nominee pool, I guess, kind of makes sense. So that's probably where we're going to be in this new post-COVID era. They've got a new CEO since then. That's probably driving things, and they want to be a little bit more focused.
Yeah, we'll talk about him a little bit later. Annie, what do you make of the diversity on the list this year? We go from Missy Elliott to Willie Nelson to, you know, we headbang, we rap, we country.
You know, I think the Rock Hall has really been moving in this direction in the last few years anyway, and it makes total sense. And I mean, I love it. You know, there's, you know, you can't, Willie Nelson, I mean, we'll talk about him later, but, you know, Willie Nelson is kind of every genre in and of himself, even.
You're right. I'm already looking at the messages coming in, and they're all talking snub, so we'll get to that. A lot of women, again, that had come up a couple of years back, that we didn't have as many women as there should be represented in the hall, and this year we see a lot of single-act females. Let's start off with Cyndi Lauper.
Come on.
Kabir, I was surprised to realize this is a first nomination for Cindy. It feels like she should have been nominated before.
It does feel like that. She's been eligible, I think, since 2007, 2008, somewhere in there. She's one of eight people debuting on the ballot, and almost all of them are of that stripe that you feel like this person must have been nominated before. But no, all eight of them, and I know we're going to get to them, so I won't rattle them off, are first-time nominees. I think the only ones who are first-time, that first-year eligible, might be the White Stripes. I'd have to check that. But
Missy Elliott.
Yeah, someone like Cyndi Lauper has been around. Yeah, Missy Elliott is one. George Michael is one. All of them are people, they've been in our consciousness forever, and they've been eligible for a long time, and now finally I think the Rock Hall has decided, you know what, it's time to recognize them.
Yeah, it is always nice, though, for those two people, two acts that get in first-time eligible. So, Annie, talk to me about Cindy's popularity, especially youth culture. We just heard Girls Just Want to Have Fun. That was an anthem.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and in the 80s, when you were looking at kind of solo artists, it was Madonna, Prince, and Cyndi Lauper. She was kind of one of the bigger ones. And, you know, she's another one. You know, she was just so enthusiastic. She spoke for women. She spoke for girls, you know, in the 80s. But then she grew up with them. You know, she talked, she went ballad, she went country, she went blues, and her activism, too. She's such a rich artist, and also her voice. I mean, you can't talk about Cyndi Lauper without talking about her voice, which I can't even describe it. It's just so, it's such an amazing instrument.
The Rock Hall said this year that it was pivoting ideology to, quote, celebrate the sound of youth culture and honor the artist whose music connects us all. And Cindy definitely falls into that category.
Oh, absolutely. You know, her whole music career has been talking about inclusivity, you know, from her early videos to how she's kind of lived her life and kind of lived her musical career. And I would completely agree with that. And she's beloved. I mean, she's one of those that has a very dedicated fan base. There's a Cyndi Lauper Museum in Florida that has driven by a fan, and they have an Induct Cyndi Lauper campaign going. And so I imagine they're having a very good morning as well.
It would be a good morning. Kabir, since you went to the idea of first-time eligible, first-time nominee, let's jump right now to Missy Elliott. One time exclusive. Come on, is it worth it? Let me work it. I put my thing down, flip it and reverse it. It's your primitive, it's waiting yet. It's your primitive, it's waiting yet. If you got a big, let me search it. To find out how hard I gotta work, yeah. It's your primitive. She was huge, kind of went away, then suddenly Missy Elliott had a renaissance, Kabir, in the past couple of years.
She did. That song, man, I got to go to confession. All of her music, if you had inducted her, put her up for induction 15 years ago, you would have made a good case. And as you said, she kind of went behind the scenes. We weren't seeing or hearing from her as much directly, but she was working with so many artists behind the scenes. And then about 10 years ago, when she came back to that fantastic Super Bowl show, very memorable for many reasons, with Katy Perry in 2015. And after that, that kind of reignited things for her. I think she's been at two Super Bowls. I could be wrong. And I think that really put her back into the forefront, put her back into people's mind. Sort of the way, this is not the greatest analogy, Queen kind of was in the 80s. We didn't hear about them as much. And then Wayne's World pivoted them back. I think with the same thing with Missy Elliott with the Super Bowl in 2015. And ever since then, she's been putting out new music again under her own name. And that's really brought her back to the forefront, as you said.
And Annie, were Missy to be actually inducted this year, she would be the first African-American woman inducted in the year she became eligible, correct?
I believe so. And there hasn't been a female rapper actually inducted into the Rock Hall. You know, there's been, you know, Jay-Z and Eminem and people like that. There's never been a female rapper, I don't believe, which is just like such an oversight. So, and I mean, you know, you talk about her production's amazing. You listen to her songs, they still sound like they're from the future. I mean, she's just such an amazing rapper, too, just so creative. So I'm honestly kind of pulling for her. I'm not going to lie.
When we talked about Cyndi Lauper, we talked about the fact that she had a video presence. Missy Elliott had a video presence.
Absolutely. You know, in the 90s, you know, she had the big, like, I don't even know what you call it, like a garbage bag, like inflatable outfit. And then just her dance moves, too. Like, she just was able to, you know, and she had the little girl in the video, too, who's grown up to be a dancer. And she had such a striking visual presence. You're right. She really understood how to combine kind of music and rhythm and her image to really make something unique.
Those two women were first-time nominees. Let's look at some of the groups now and the idea that they're back again. Possibly this is the year. Let's start with Soundgarden. Hang my head, drown my fear, till you all just disappear. 1990s Live, Kabir, Soundgarden, one of those staples from the Seattle grunge scene. Something, though, set them apart from Pearl Jam, from Nirvana, who were already in the Rock Hall.
That's true. And in, at least in my opinion, you know, Soundgarden, they started much before both of those bands, but they achieved their success several years after. So their career was kind of a long, I hate to say this, waiting game compared to, you know, Nirvana and Pearl Jam came right in. And at least nationally, were pretty well known pretty quickly. Of course, Nirvana wasn't around as long as a functioning unit, but Soundgarden, they achieved their success a little later. And to me, this is what I was getting at, their guitar attack set them apart from not just those groups, Alice in Chains, a lot of Seattle groups with that clean sound. It wasn't just the grungy sort of wall of sound. You had that very clean dual guitar attack, and I think that's one of the things that really set them apart. And I was surprised when they did not get in on their first try, or that they hadn't been nominated their first year, 2012. So I think this could be the year for them.
Could be. Annie, they were nominated in 2020, but then not in 21, not in 22. So they're back now. Does this mean some kind of legitimacy?
You know, when an artist kind of gets nominated, then goes away, then comes back, that is kind of a nudge that maybe something's going on here, you know. And I think, you know, I too was surprised that honestly they didn't get in and hadn't been nominated, because, you know, to me it's Pearl Jam, Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, and you have Chris Cornell's wonderful, wonderful voice. And, you know, obviously he passed away a few years ago, sadly. And, you know, he also just, you know, he just kind of cuts through the music, and, you know, voice alone as well as the guitars. I mean, they're such a singular act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you always hate it when the band can't perform in full because they've lost members by the time they're inducted. Another band that is up for nomination again, Rage Against the Machine. Okay, Annie, Rage Against the Machine, one of the first bands that really did merge rap and rock. We still see that influence even now.
Absolutely. You know, they're another one that they've been nominated so many times and they haven't gotten in, and I can't figure out why, because they are so influential. You know, in recent years, there have been some younger artists that have covered them, and obviously Rage came back last year and had that really, really successful tour. Their music is just so, you know, forward-thinking and political, and so much of what they talked about, sadly, 30 years ago is relevant again. And so they're really, you know, one of those acts that, you know, seems to me like a given to get in, but we'll see what the voters think.
Yeah, glad you mentioned that tour. First time in years they were out there last year. Kabir, still a huge demand from fans. They could fill the big arena.
They could, and, you know, these inductions are now in big arenas, so I think, as you said, could this be their year? I think it could be, especially Tom Morello, the guitarist. He is very involved with the Rock Hall. Every year with the inductions, he helps induct someone, or he presents one of the videos or something. So he's, as they say, a friend of the Rock Hall. And I'm not saying that's going to influence one way or the other, but certainly they recognize his work, his talent, his influence, and his groups, Rage Against the Machine. So I think all of that will help hopefully get them into the Rock Hall. Another one like Soundgarden that I'm surprised wasn't in on the first ballot.
And another one that I was surprised wasn't in as well, Iron Maiden. Annie, the only heavy metal band this year.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think if you talk to fans, it's been, you know, they've been nominated one time before, long overdue. Iron Maiden comes to America, sells out arena tours consistently, no radio play, no press. They just kind of do their thing. And, you know, I think the Rock Hall has very slowly been kind of warming to the idea of heavy metal and hard rock being inducted. And so my fingers are crossed that Iron Maiden, this will be their year.
Could be their year. Does it surprise you, Kabir, when we see bands go on and off, and sometimes off and on and off again?
It surprises me. Well, personally, it surprises me, but in the grand scheme of things, that's just what happens. We look at other Hall of Fames. Well, some of them, like baseball, you know, you stay on for consecutive years based on the voting. But here, with the Rock Hall, it's really every year the committee that gets together and looks at These are the number of nominees we are looking at, we are aiming for, and those valuable slots. Maybe this year Kate Bush is a little more popular than, say, Rufus featuring Chaka Khan, and so Kate Bush gets the nomination this year. 'Cause they look at everything, not just the past record sales and influence, but also where is this person today? What is their influence? And I mentioned Kate Bush because, as we all know, she had sort of a reignition of her popularity in America last year. A group like Iron Maiden, I'm wondering if this year maybe they're getting the nod because Judas Priest just got in. I'm not saying they're similar, but they're both heavy metal, both British bands, and I'm thinking maybe the Rock Hall saw, oh, that's a legitimate part of rock and roll. That's something that we want to recognize. It's something that the fans want to recognize. Let's go further and let's look at some of these new other groups from the new wave of British heavy metal.
Well, since you tied us into Kate Bush, the song Running Up the Hill, Annie, lay out her career, the resurgence this year, and Running Up the Hill, of course, popped up in Stranger Things, so people are aware again.
Absolutely. You know, she started off in the late 70s in England and was a massive, massive star and has never really had a lot of American success. You know, Running Up That Hill was honestly probably her biggest ever sort of exposure in America. But she was, an active artist through the 80s into the 90s. She didn't like to tour very much. She did a very well-received tour about a decade ago, or like a residency in England. And that kind of ignited things. But, you know, she's been on the ballot. It's all about timing, right? Because she was on the ballot last year, and had Stranger Things come out before we voted, maybe she would have gotten in last year. But she's just one of those artists that is just beloved for being, you know, just a virtuosic musician.
And for sticking with it, yeah.
Absolutely. And just being a songwriter and just a very also unique singer. You know, she inspired Tori Amos. She inspired so many other kind of, classical leaning solo artists. Like, you know, and she's just, you know, and quirky and literate. Let's put it that way.
My producer is pointing at me saying, hey, you started talking about Kate without playing her music, so here.
It's you and me. It's you and me.
And Kabir, again, she really is an influence for so many younger singers.
She is. That music, by the way, Drew, Rachel, my editor, Carrie, did a fantastic job this morning pulling this together.
Thank you.
Yes. And you. Not just younger singers, though. I mean, if you look at Elton John, who, of course, predates her by many years, he cites her as an influence. Stevie Nicks. And then, of course, younger singers, more recent ones, Dido, Sinead O'Connor, you name it. Pretty much any female artist has cited her as an influence at some point. And so I think that really helps get her name in front of the Rock Hall committee. Now, as far as the people actually picking the ballot, I think last year, Running Up That Hill becoming a big hit in the U.S. finally, getting her a lot of U.S. recognition is going to help put her into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Good point, though. When you have somebody like Stevie Nicks, who's in multiple times citing you, that's some pull that the Rock Hall can't ignore.
No, that's pretty true. And Stevie Nicks, of course, she's American. She's part of Fleetwood Mac. In Great Britain, as Annie pointed out, Kate Bush has a much higher profile. So Dave Gilmour of Pink Floyd, who predates her by many years, he has cited her. So all of these folks who are citing her, who both came before her and after, she is so unique. I'm surprised that she's not in, but her profile in the U.S. hasn't been as high. And actually, I have to say, in the late 90s, there was a Saturday Night Live sketch which was rejected. It never made it on air. And the central joke was that nobody could name in the U.S. a Kate Bush song. And so the fact that 20 years later now she's everywhere because of her use in other media, I think that really speaks to the power of other media and her renewed popularity that'll get her in.
It certainly does. Well, you took us across the ocean. Let's stay there. Here's George Michael. It was so hard to turn on MTV or VH1 in the early 80s, the early 90s, without seeing George Michael, starting with Wham, then through his solo career. Kabir, were you surprised that he hadn't even been nominated prior to this?
I was. I assumed, oh, he must have been nominated a couple of years. At some point after he passed away, he's been nominated. No, this is his first year, and he's been eligible since 2010 as a solo artist. Of course, he'd be eligible before that for his work in Wham, in the group Wham. Yes, I was surprised that he wasn't nominated because, as you said, he was huge, not just with Wham, but then when he went solo. You never know how that's going to go as an artist when you leave a popular group. He was even bigger. That Faith album was everywhere. I mean, that album, I think that came out in 87, and then his next album, Listen Without Prejudice, was 90. In between, just the singles from Faith, he was everywhere. You would think he was releasing new music every week. So he was huge for so many years and then kind of disappeared. There was some things happening with him personally, and we didn't hear from him as much, but he was always there in Great Britain, still popular. And here he had his large segments of fans. So that was surprising that he wasn't nominated. He was one of the first male superstars of the MTV age, probably after Michael Jackson, the most popular after him.
Mm-hmm. Annie, his fight for LGBTQ causes, it was looked at differently in the 90s than it is now. How do you think the activism plays into his legacy and his importance?
You know, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head that now, kind of with hindsight, 30 years later, we're ready to kind of notice his activism and notice, you know, how important that was and that he was a trailblazer. You know, that it, you're right that, it, you know, and you talk about, you know, Cyndi Lauper too, you know, people forget that back then, you know, it was not, you know, there was a lot of hesitance for people, for certain artists to get involved with activism because they were worried about their careers. And, you know, George basically was like, I am who I am, you know, and that was reflected in his music and reflected with the way he, you know, operated in his career. And, you know, I'm a big fan. And so I'm too very happy that he was nominated this morning.
Another first time nominee was Sheryl Crow. A mix of styles with Sheryl, country, pop, she wrote songs. Speak more to her music, Annie, and why finally she's getting that recognition.
Well, you know, like talking about, you know, Tom Morello, you know, being at a lot of Rock Hall things, you know, Sheryl last year inducted, you know, Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo. And she has, you know, basically since the early 90s and even before that, she was a backup singer for Michael Jackson, has really carved her own way in music. You know, it's kind of pop, a little bit Americana, a little bit, you know, rock and roll, kind of bluesy. She's kind of done it all, and she's a really massive inspiration on a younger generation of musicians. When you think of, there's a lot of indie musicians that cite her as sort of a, you know, basically mm-hmm. an influence. And just in general, I mean, we think about her 90s work as well. You know, it's, she was huge in the 90s. She had multiple records. You know, Tuesday Night Music Club was her debut, and that, you know, she's just been kind of in our consciousness for years now. This is kind of, I think, a recognition of that.
All I Want to Do, one of those songs, the very first time you heard it, you knew it was going to number one. You really did. Interesting, too, that she's one of those people where they nominate one year, I mean, or rather they introduce one year, they're nominated the next. It happened with Lionel Richie.
And it happened with Trent Reznor as well. Mm-hmm. You know, he did this wonderful, wonderful Cure intro, and then Nine Inch Nails got in a few years later. And it's very true. And I think that, you know, doing something like that helps kind of the nominating committee and helps the Rock Hall, you know, it helps the artists kind of so show a different side of them. You know, Sheryl's speech inducting Pat was so awesome, you know, and it really showed she was able to kind of talk about their mm-hmm. musicianship, but also its effect on her. And, you know, it shows the continuum, I think, more of, you know, hey, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, we are, you know, being, it's modernized, you know, it's not just something that's kind of, you know, trapped in the past.
Right.
Everyone's kind of moving forward.
We're approaching the bottom of the hour. Let's squeeze in a Tribe Called Quest.
Can I kick it?
Yes, we can.
Can I kick it?
Yes, we can.
Well, I'm gone.
Nominated last year, part of the list again, Kabir. Talk about this early pioneering hip hop group.
Well, they were one of the first ones that they fused so many different elements into their music. And a more mainstream, maybe sound that people weren't ready for or weren't expecting. If you look at the Beastie Boys, who they actually, some of them worked with at various times, Beastie Boys might be kind of a more record selling, shall we say, example of what Tribe Called Quest was doing a few years before them. The Beastie Boys, I am going to assume, heard their records and said, oh, well, we can do that.
And yep.
So, yeah. And so that's what happened. Again, they've lost a member, so unfortunately they won't be performing with the full classic lineup. But you mentioned records at the top of this. A Tribe Called Quest, several very well done vinyl reissues of their work in the last year or so. I have a few of them. And I think that might have, again, brought them back to the public consciousness and put them on the ballot for the second time. They would add some very much needed hip-hop cred to the Rock Hall. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good point in their favor.
Okay, and the last first-time nominee we're going to talk about, the 89-year-old Willie Nelson.
Mamas, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys.
Annie, he's still out there touring with superstars a third of his age.
Willie, I wish I had his stamina. You know, I don't know, whatever his secret is, he needs to bottle it and give it to all of us. You know, Willie is ageless. You know, Willie is still releasing records. He's writing books. You know, he's kind of the Dolly Parton slot, I think, this year, and, you know, kind of a country icon being nominated. But honestly, Willie is more rock and roll than probably almost everybody on, you know, nominated this year, you know, if you look at his career.
Okay. Thanks for that. We are not going to have time to get to people griping about who's not in, but Chaka Khan and Jethro Tull came up on my call screen here, as always. Last thing, Kabir, we don't know where the induction ceremony is this year. Why not?
Because they're going to announce it in May when they announce the list of final inductees. And as we know, for many years, first 20-some years, it was almost always in New York at the Waldorf Astoria. About the last 10 years, they've tried to rotate Cleveland in every third year. Last year, though, Los Angeles. And with the new CEO who's taken over, he's even said maybe London, maybe Nashville in the future. So not sure if it's going to be in Cleveland, New York, L.A., one of those cities, or somewhere else totally surprising like Seattle. But we'll find out in May.
I heard a rumor that they're looking at London really hard, too, not necessarily for this year. Okay, we're going to wrap it there. Want to thank you both so much for the fast half hour.
Thank you for having me.
And, of course, we did not also talk about the other nominees, Warren Zevon, White Stripes, The Spinners, and Joy Division. Let's close as we go to break with Warren Zevon. You're listening to The Sound of Ideas. I'm Rick Jackson. Today, we have the privilege of talking with author, musician, and writer Mark Lee Shannon, well-known around the region from his Akron bass, most notably playing with Michael Stanley and the Resonators. But that's not why he's here. Mark's also an Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services certified peer recovery supporter, and he's thriving in his own recovery 8 years on. He's penned a new book, it's out, called Sober Chronicles, My Journey of Discovery Along the Path to Recovery. Mark Lee Shannon, welcome to The Sound of Ideas.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so honored to be here.
It was 5 years, really, into your sobriety when you were approached about crafting articles that eventually became this book, Sober Chronicles. Is there something about that length of time? Did you need to have enough experience as a former substance abuser to be able to write cogently?
Honestly, Rick, I was just falling forward. I was just tumbling forward. At that point, I had been asked to be part of an article for a magazine in Akron, Ohio that was called The Devil Strip, which was an arts and community mag.
We loved it well, yeah.
Yeah, and they said, we need some sober artists. Would you do it? And I said, yeah, of course. You know, I don't know what I'm doing, so I'm going to do it. And that came out pretty well, and I remember speaking to some of the staff journalists there and also to Rosie and Murphy, and I said, you know, out of the blue, I said, I want to write a monthly column. I didn't know what I was doing. I had no clue. I had done a lot of corporate writing for my PAC. I mean, a lot of board reports, a lot of monthly reports, emails, but I'd never taken the time to write about myself and that journey. And it was cathartic in a lot of ways. It took a few months of getting started and Rosie's good guidance. She was a journalism grad, so she really helped me get to the core of what I was trying to say.
Writing with emotion is different than writing facts.
It really is, because when I typically write, being a songwriter, I know that there's a certain amount of muse, and that is, you know, when it's coming through, you better get in the boat and float. And so I would oftentimes look for a title of an article, something that was going on around me, and I'd say, that's what I want to write about. You know, I'd see something, or I'd experience something, or something would be, and then I would just sit down and go. And she was really kind enough to say, okay, I see what your style is. It's conversational. Just go with it. Just
guidance
write that
is good.
Yeah. Oh, are you kidding me? That was great. I was at boot school.
When I look at chapter titles of the book, they clearly follow the addiction path. Some of them, The Bottom, Stop Resisting, Lonely Work. The messages are right there, but in reading, we see that sobriety takes effort, and I don't think you knew it was going to be that heavily required when you chose to end the lifestyle you were on and start a new one.
Well, it wasn't my first rodeo. I had tried for some time. I knew that I had a substance use disorder. You know, people ask me all the time, how did you know? And really for me, it was the simple fact of I would tell myself I wasn't going to drink and I couldn't not drink. And the second one, which is generally regarded by most, is that once you start, you can't control the quantity you drink when you're at that stage. And so I knew I had a problem in 1998. I started a 12-step program, but I didn't get in, right? I was like that guy that bought a gym membership, that got the right clothes and went and sat on the machines and kind of looked around. I was that guy.
You were that guy.
And so, you know, great suits, came late, left early. I was working very much in a corporate job at the time, which was, you know, high stress threshold, continually stressed to reach goals. And
so you felt like you needed the drink.
I didn't expect it. It was the best way I can describe it is that, you know, when you're struggling with chronic stress syndrome, oftentimes people will use whatever they have available to them. Sometimes it's faith. Sometimes it's exercise. Sometimes it's alcohol. And I became one of those guys. And, you know, what I've learned about, you know, alcohol use disorder and substance use disorder is that it's an illness. And I couldn't see that. I thought I was just a bad person. And I couldn't fix it. I can't stop doing this. Why can't I stop doing it? So writing these articles was really in the early part of my expression to say, okay, everybody out there, here's one guy's story of how it is. Maybe it's useful. I think that the key thing for me that I've understood in sobriety is it really comes down to three things. No matter what, today I'm not going to drink. Today I'm not going to use. The second part that's really crucial and essential to me is you have to join a group of people that are just like you. I call it join a band, right? I'm a musician, right? Get in with a band of guys that likes to play the same music. And of course, I'm using analogies. But it's about, you know, people that are just like you who can say, oh, you lost your job? I lost my job. Oh, your kids won't talk to you? Your wife is mad at you? That happened to me too. Right. That peer-to-peer support
commonality
is so critically common for me to get over the fact that I didn't, you know, I thought I was really special, you know. And the final thing is once you get it, give it back. And so that's part of what this book is about for me is just to be able to say, hey, this is just one guy's way. He did it. And the articles came out monthly, so I never expected to compile them in a book at all. They were always just, you know, hey, this is the song I'm writing today. That's how it came out.
Akron plays a huge role in the book, as it does in your life. How critical was it that you went through these experiences here rather than Los Angeles or the other places you've been?
That's a great question. When I lived in Los Angeles in my 20s, I was a studio musician. And for me, being in the business I was in the arts, oftentimes working on project-oriented work, right? You would find that, you know, you would have a group of friends working on a record and or a project or a film. And then when that project was done, the friends were done. So you had the ability to be very transient. And when I was out there, that was my story. I mean, I think that there was at some point in time, a certain drug really was a game changer with me. And that was cocaine. That was the very first time I realized I'm not in control here. Mm-hmm. I can't say no. But it was, you know, out there especially, there were two groups of people, especially in the recording session scene of the 1980s, either you did or you didn't. And if you did or didn't, you were usually hired that way too, you know. So I think it was really extremely crucial for me that I was at home in this area. Northeast Ohio has such a rich history for recovery and for, you know, accepting substance use disorder as illness instead of just a common personality defect.
Interesting, you talk about the band, you talk about friends. Several people in the book come to the surface as being critical to your success in recovery. We'll get specific later. Mm-hmm. But for other people going through this battle right now, is having that support, that group, ultimately essential?
You know, the first thing you have to do, you have to come to the fact is you know, being able to say, you know, I got a problem. You know, there's a story, and I'll keep it short. Mm-hmm. But there's a guy who has a bad car, right? And the car is constantly breaking down, always breaking down. You know, his family, his work, everybody says, you got a car. So one day he's driving, and he's, you know, in a single lane file in a busy stretch, and the car breaks down. Now, he knows that car is not going to run. He's got to finally admit it. And the next thing you know, there's somebody knocking on his door, and it's the guy saying, hey, and it's his buddy. And he says, hey, I know a guy that can fix your car. Right.
And he's right around the corner.
Right. He's right around the corner. You've heard this story maybe. Okay. And the bottom line is the guy sits in his car and he stares at the car. He stares at his friends and goes, okay, yeah, man, let's push this car. That willingness to be able to seek and to say, please help me. And to say, I'm not the guy that can fix it. I was using all the wrong pronouns. I can fix it. If I just don't drink on Tuesday, maybe I'll just drink Saturday, but not Sunday. You know, I'll drink that. you know, that light liquor because, you know, that burns clean. Or I won't hang out with those people because they're the problem, not me.
You're making excuses.
Right, or I won't go to that bar mm-hmm. because they pour heavy, right? I mean, all those things that I would say that just were nonsense. The problem wasn't out there. The problem was me.
We just came through the holidays. You addressed that early on as a pitfall for people who make that pledge to stay sober Saturday, not Sunday, especially when you want to be in family and families indulge. This is one of several places in the book where you offer practical advice, things like have a plan for your exit. Elsewhere, we see tips like ask for forgiveness or don't waste time. Yet I wouldn't classify this as a self-help book, would you?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just a guy's story, you know. I think more than anything now, and one of the things I like about the book, and it's difficult to read because, you know, this is my first book, right? I'm learning how to do this. You know, it's like my first band in a lot of ways, right? Sure, I know the gear. I can stand up. I can play the songs. Right. But is it really any good? You know, to me, I think the important part is that this is one guy's story about what he went through. And I think that in the world, you know, when we're just overcome with academic approaches, or maybe, you know, approaches that are maybe from a 12-step program or from, you know, a medical program, you know, it tends to not be as personal as you want. I mean, all of us have experienced in the medical community that burnout that we see today from people that just don't have any more compassion to give. And those are some of my early experiences, especially in detox. Detox was a game changer for me, and I realized that I had a medical problem. But a lot of the people that were helping me then just didn't have the capacity for much compassion, unfortunately.
Talking with Mark Lee Shannon, an Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services certified peer recovery supporter.
That's a lot of words.
That is a lot of words. Yeah, you know him probably from the Resonators, but the big title is why we're here. Right. One of the people I wanted to talk about on your journey is Megan Maxwell, who's an Ohio certified peer recovery support specialist.
Right.
Very close to the way I introduced you, but not quite. How important was she?
Megan, she's just, you know, I can't say it, but she's a bad, you know what. You know, she is just in the
bad mama jamma, right?
She is in there with people. One of the things that I am privileged to be able to do is to work with Judge Joy Malik Oldfield's court in the Turning Point program, which used to be called the Drug Court. And so what this is it's a program by which people can turn their lives around. And I'm a volunteer advocate. But Megan is one of those people that is really in there every day dealing with the people that are trying to overcome that early stage of substance use disorder and dealing with some of the problems you spoke of early, family issues, employment issues. You know how tough it is to get a job anywhere when you're a convicted felon? It's almost impossible. It's really difficult to participate in the legal economy when you're thinking, I can go work this minimum wage or the small wage hourly job, or I can deal drugs. Pick one, you know? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the people that we deal with, especially in the court system, you know, they didn't grow up in the best gardens. They didn't have the tending of a father and a mother or a family, you know, to be able to say, hey, you know, here's what you do. Here's the fertilizer. Here's the sunlight. Here's the watering that you need. Oftentimes, it's generational, and it's really difficult. People like Megan are a living example to say, hey, look, I did it. And that's really what, when you say Ohio Certified Peer Recovery Supporter, all it really is I'm a recovery coach. It
means I've been there.
Yeah, I'm a recovery coach. I'm a lived example. I'm a person that will stand up and say, hey, I've been there. You know, let me tell you what I know. I very rarely will tell people what to do. I'll tell them what I think. And that's a big difference, I think, for somebody that's in early stage of recovery from substance use disorder or mental health issues.
We have touched on family a couple of times. You write lovingly of your grandfather.
Oh, yeah. My grandfather was a Lebanese immigrant, right? And he came to this country in the early part of the 20th century on a boat riding steerage, 14 years old. You know, and I used to think that was like really super special, but it turns out that after some research, you find that that wasn't. There were so many people that came over to this country as teenagers. He entered the country legally, and he, you know, came to Northeast Ohio. He swung steel. He was probably involved in a little bootlegging in the 20s and 30s, which was not uncommon, you know. And he was the kind of guy that, and I think all of us know this older gentleman, and they're a generation that we're losing rapidly. They don't say much, right? But when they speak, everybody in the room turns and listens. And that, to me, is a model of, I think, the way I want to be when I grow up.
Another person you write about was Elle, the angel, you call her.
Right.
The voice of strength and compassion. You determine it's an on-again, off-again romance, but not the marrying type of love.
Right.
You said a person so special to you, you finally did write a song for her.
Sometimes love is had my way. Sent angels out to guide me, just to visit, not to stay. Let it go, let it go.
She's passed on now, but you included that you would not be writing without her intervention, her love, and her toughness.
You know, some people come into your life like angels, right? And I know that that may be off-putting to some people that don't have a spiritual sense. You know, I grew up Catholic and I study Buddhist teachings, but I believe that people come into your life in almost a magic and mysterious way at the right time to intervene when, you know, the grace of a higher power decides, hey, you know what, this one, he's a good one, or they're a good one. How about a little help? That's grace to me. It's this, what Anne Lamott calls the spiritual WD-40 in life, right? And they give you a little. And she was that one to me. She was a very strong, she was a horse trainer, and she was a very strong woman. And she took me in and gave me the medical and spiritual and emotional medical attention that I needed. And but it wasn't meant to be that relationship where we'd be life partners. But, you know, sometimes people show up right in the nick of time in your life, and they change the trajectory of what happens to you. And she was to me, very much so.
You were devastated after losing her. Almost immediately afterwards, you lost Michael Stanley. You couldn't even mention it in the columns because of what you called waves of grief and sadness that were overwhelming. That same chapter, your suggestions listed not taking your health for granted, not isolating yourself, and that's something I think addicts tend to do.
Oh yeah, see, unfortunately, my den of despair was a great big wonderful house in Copley, Ohio, one of those great doctor or lawyer houses that I had lived in during my corporate years when I was wearing really incredibly great suits, you know, but loneliness, you know, is just the same in a $500,000 house as it is in a $100,000 house. That loneliness, that despair, it's exactly the same feeling to me. And there was a song that Michael and I did. It was called Sound of a Train, and it was meant to be my second record because he produced my first record. And he eventually recorded it, but I got out of detox. And he sent me an email and said, Sauce Man, because that was my nickname. Mm-hmm. He said, check your email. And in that email was a waveform file of the song Sound of a Train that he had finished. Now, he will tell you, he would have told you that I wrote 80% of the song, but the 20% he added made the difference. And to me, that song, you know, is always representative of what that feeling was like to me, to live in a great big lonely house. Stars Are Out Tonight, it's amazing, but a big old empty house will drive you crazy, you know. And that's something that isolation. Loneliness. There's a book by Johann Hari called Chasing the Scream where he decides in this book, he says, you know, the opposite of addiction isn't necessarily sobriety. The opposite of addiction is connectedness, being connected, feeling a part of something and not alone.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned the Devil's Trip columns. Mm. From August 2019 on, at the end of every column, we see the words Steady On. A signature of yours eventually became a pretty well-received song.
Steady On. Steady on, won't be long, carry on.
How did the phrase become a mantra for the new Mark?
You know, I have no idea how things show up in your life. As a writer, all I know is you better listen. You know, you better read the road signs. I was just sitting around the other day and, you know, where does the music come from? You know, I really, people ask me that all the time. You know, they think, oh, that song you wrote, it's so great. I think I'm just a catcher. I think sometimes it comes through us, not from us. And I think if you are a writer or a performer or a host, you know, all of a sudden the idea shows up. Where does it come from? You know, I don't want to believe that I'm so amazing that it's coming from me, but I do know that you better pay attention, write it down, do something with it. And that was one of them.
I've seen you play live with the Resonators, with the Midlife Chryslers, probably 8 or 9 times.
Really?
All prior to your journey to sobriety.
Wow, yeah.
Right? Are you a better musician now than when I saw you?
Absolutely, 100%, because, you know, I was an imposter. My playing at that time was segregated along the lines of, I just need to get this one thing done. I got a gig with the Rezos coming up. Here's my parts. Michael would send us out the song list, and we would have, you know, I'd get the guitars together because my role in that band was the utility guy. I mean, you need third baseman, you need second baseman, you don't need, you got to sing a part, we play mandolin, we play this. I was that guy because I had, you know, I was one of the guys that had musical training and went to music school, and I could read and I could write and I could do all that stuff and I could play a lot of different stuff. And that was the way I made a living in LA during sessions. But without a question, what I'm doing today is much more an authentic speak of the gifts and the talents that I've gotten. And, you know, to me, talent is really, it's when everybody's out having a good time, I'm practicing. That's what talent is, man. You know, tonight I've got scheduled 7 to 9 p.m., Michael Shannon practice. It's in my calendar like this appointment is today. Same thing. It's work.
Any regret now that you think you could have been better had you been cleaner earlier?
You know, Eric Clapton wrote a lot about that in his book. And he said that, you know, the biggest regret he had was that he had wasted so much time. And I think that the important thing to do, especially along the lines of the teaching, spiritual teachings that I have today, is I can't really go back and change any of that. All I can do now is start now and go forward and change the ending. So I look back on that with a lot of regrets. But that's, if you work a 12-step program, you know that part of that 12-step process is to go out and try to make it right, make those amends to people when it's possible, when it wouldn't cause harm to you or others.
One of the closing chapters, we see this phrase: we are very complex beings with extraordinary abilities, yet how do we find the daily, everyday juju just to get going? You called that Grit and Grace, one of your favorite columns in the series.
Yeah. You know, I think all of us experience the exact same things. You know, one thing that the Dalai Lama will tell us is we're all the same human beings. We're all the same human beings. We all experience the same things. And I think all of us know, for instance, you know, when I'm working out, right, that first push-up, that's the hard one, man. You know, you're putting the sneakers on to go for the walk with Martin the dog. That's the hard one.
The rest of it's inertia.
Right. It's like making that decision to be willing. That's the grit, I think, that you have. And, you know, I think all of us have seen that TED Talk, the one determinant factor of why people are more successful is not education. It's not family. It's not wealth. It's that unknown thing called grit. What is that? And I think it's the willingness to stay on course and to desire something for whatever reason we have it. Grace is that little bit of luck we get. You know, that little, like I said before, that spiritual WD-40 where all of a sudden, you know what I mean? All of a sudden I find myself here at IdeaStream doing this interview with you. That's grace to me.
You wrote in the book, I think, it's the grit that gets me to it and the grace that gets me through it.
Right, yeah. Right. Isn't that the truth? You know what I mean? Because how many of us show up where we're supposed to be? We go, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
I don't want to do it. I don't want to work today at work. I don't want to, you know. But somehow we get through the day. Maybe we're not at our best, but we get through it. We get through it. That's grit to me.
You talk about the efforts to come through the last couple of years. Could the 2012 version of you made it through COVID, retooling the working model, finding ways to get income?
Interesting. I think that some of us, because of maybe the determining factors of our early childhood, are blessed with certain skills. And for me, I have always been that guy that has been a little bit underestimated. And I just hang, I think the only skill I have literally is that I get up more times than I fall down. That's it. That's it. It's not magic. I'm not special. You know what I mean? I just can find a way to somehow get back up. And the 2012 guy was still able to get back up, even though he had been at that point probably on his way or been through 3 trips to the ICU because of his substance use disorder. You know what happens when you've got 6 IVs in you trying to hydrate you, you know, and, you know, you've got doctors telling you, Mr. Shannon, what's wrong with you? You make promises yourself. But the paradigm shift for me was when I went into chemical dependency counseling and I realized that I had a disorder. I wasn't a bad person. I was a sick guy. All of a sudden, I realized, wait a minute, I just need to get well. And then I started on a journey. But, you know, unfortunately, there's a common occurrence of relapse for people when they go into early sobriety because of a phenomenon called post-acute withdrawal. Post-acute withdrawal is your brain saying to you, yeah, we're not working yet. It's that spinny beach ball thing that you get on your computer going, wait, wait, wait. One of the things that I remember very clearly about early sobriety is I was still working in the corporate world and I was on the road and I had called a person that was helping me with a project and she said to me, Mr. Shannon, are you aware that you just called me 20 minutes ago to ask me these same questions?
Wow.
And
I had no idea.
And that was my brain trying to heal to work. And if you understand the neurobiology and the neuroscience of addiction, there's a physician who is really good at explaining this. Her name is Dr. Nicole Labor. And she has a number of essays online and a couple of books that I want to recommend to people. But she will document the illness that goes on with the brain and why the brain takes a time to regenerate itself and to be well again. And that's where a lot of addicts and alcoholics fail.
You said the essays in the book helped you to understand and that you weren't a writer. You just wanted to get that out there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like it's going to help others as well?
You know, we can always hope, right? It's like being a songwriter. Do we write it for, you know, I remember seeing very clearly a video of David Bowie describing that once you start writing for other people, you lose something. You have to write from your own true, authentic voice. What is it? And again, I think those great songs, you know, think about your favorite Stanley song or your favorite Springsteen song. What is it about that? You know what it is? You are that character. You feel it. So if I can resonate and if people can say, yeah, if I can be an example, then that's my mission. I really try at this point in my life, and I'm in the third set. I talk a lot about that. You know, this is the third set of me. I'll be 65 years old right now. I'm in the third set. Everything's really going. But unfortunately, when you get to a certain age, you start seeing your friends head for the exits, right? But if I can be an example in some of the work that I do with I have a music and message program that I do, and I work as a volunteer, and I work with Mercy Health Systems in Youngstown and the Meridian Health Systems in Youngstown, and I'm also a member of the County of Summit ADM board. If I can be an example of like, hey, let me raise my hand and tell you what it's like from my side of the table, I think it's useful. I really do. And if I can be of some use, who wouldn't want to do that, right?
We will leave it there. The book is called Sober Chronicles, My Journey of Discovery Along the Path of Recovery. Mark Lee Shannon is the author and a good man. You really are a good man.
Thank you,
man.
Brother. I appreciate
Thank you for
you.
Being here.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
To get the last word on today's topic, send an email to soi@ideastream.org or on Twitter @SoundOfIdeas. Tomorrow on the program, we discuss the rise of artificial intelligence programs that are making their way into the classroom. The program ChatGPT is being utilized by some students to write essays and papers with mixed reactions from educators. If you missed any portion of this program, find us online or listen to the Sound of Ideas podcast, also rebroadcast tonight at 9 and 89.7 WKSU. And as we close today, a little more music from one of this year's first-time Rock Hall nominees, Age of Consent, from New Order. I'm Rick Jackson. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.